today, but Jeremy Cape, he's the Partnerships and Investment Manager for the Namoi CMA, and he's going to be talking about some of the work the CMA are doing on modelling the cumulative risks of mining on their NRM assets. So I welcome Jeremy to the stage.
Thanks, Paula.
I'll give you
15 minutes. Okay. Thank you for that. Just referring back to Paula's comment about last night, I was, I think Dave Anthony might even have been in the audience. We were had an irrigation forum in Griffith in the early 90s, and there was a very good conference dinner, and I was talking in the death spot, John Wolfenden, first speaker after lunch on the next day. And so I referred back to the dinner and said how much I'd enjoyed it, and I'd enjoyed the red wine, and I said, but I did think when I went back home to Adelaide, which is where I was living, the disadvantage was that I would get to enjoy the red wine I had last night again. I said, but unfortunately I'll get to enjoy all of the red wine that you all had as well last night. So I can't quite say that up in the Namoi, because it would take so long that I'm sure it would go through several hundred bladders before it ever got down to the other end of the system. So I'm not sure whether that makes me resilient. We'll see. What I'd like to do this morning is just give you a quick snapshot of this work that we've been doing in the CMA over the last year or so. I knew it was always going to be a challenge following John, because I worked briefly with him in the Irrigation Futures CRC, and I knew that he would give a lively and entertaining presentation. But I didn't realise that he was going to talk so much about resilience thinking, and that is actually a perfect segue into the topic that I'm going to talk about now, because that resilience thinking underpinned the catchment action plan that was developed by the CMA in 2000 throughout 2010-2011. And the concept of thresholds on that slide that John put up is a very important underpinning to the work that I'm going to describe now and to this modelling approach, because the impacts that we are trying to estimate and identify are those impacts on the thresholds for the biophysical assets of the catchment. The Catchment Action Plan is written up in four major themes: biodiversity, land, water and people. And the Namoi CMA and the Central West CMA, which is immediately to our west, were the first two CMAs in New South Wales to adopt this resilience-based approach. And it involved an extensive program of mapping the biophysical assets of the catchment and using those maps to identify where threshold points were going to be either crossed or were under threat. So as an example, vegetation extent was one of the thresholds that's been identified across the catchment. So given, now I hope if I do that, so given that sort of background of the development of a catchment action plan, we were then concerned about, so why are we modelling the risks from mining? Well, anybody who lives in this area would understand that it's a significant issue and is a growing industry in the catchment, and it had been identified in the consultation processes that we went through in developing the Catchment Action Plan, and as a result of that we actually, and I guess this slide really, now if I press them, is that the point of it? Yeah. When I first looked at this slide some months ago, it was quite an eye-opener to me to realise the extent of the development and also the extent of potential development that might take place throughout the Gunnedah Coal Basin, which is the larger area, as you can see there. On the legend here, we've identified the white triangles. There's a few of them there, are existing coal mines. There are some pink triangles, I'm not sure whether you can see them very well, sort of across there, which are under development or going through the current environmental impact statement process. And there's a yellow one there, which is actually an even larger project, which is similarly going through the application and evaluation stages. So clearly when you've got, and I guess the other points that are around here, this darker area is actually petroleum, potential petroleum exploration licences. There's coal seam gas exploration all the way down the western edge of the Gunnedah Basin. And this basin, this geological feature, actually runs all the way up through the Darling Downs and into Queensland. This is other minerals associated in the east of the catchment there. So as you can see, it's a bit of a no-brainer to think that the potential impacts of these on the natural resources in the catchment could be highly significant. So the aim of the model was, it was clear that we had to respond as the agency with responsibility for looking after or forming partnerships to look after the natural resources in the catchment. So there was an extractive industry policy that was developed in 2009, and I've mentioned the resilience-based catchment action plan, which is covering the period 2010 to 2020. I guess a couple of points about that, again, picking up from the slides that John, he mentioned the adaptability of it. That catchment action plan is a document that will change over time. As better information becomes available, we will update the data sets. So there has been a Namoi water study that was in part funded by the mining industry, and it's very important, we believe, that we get access to that data to put into the model that we're building here. And so it was clear from the previous slide the extent of that and the feedback we got from the community that doing something about it, coming up with a response to identifying what the impacts of mining might be on the catchment assets was really critical. The first step in that process was actually to develop a framework for the model. And this was work that was completed late last year, and the report on this framework is available on our website, and I'll give you the references at the end of the talk. So there were a couple of key points about it, and it was a very rigorous process that was gone through to develop the framework. It had to employ the Australian Standard for Risk, so the way in which the impacts are measured is looking at, for example, impacts on vegetation extent, for example, identifying the consequence of that impact, whether it was likely to be severe or minor, and then looking at the likelihood of that. So it's a fairly standard risk matrix, consequence, likelihood of happening, and severity of consequence. And that follows the Australian standard and is linked into an ISO standard. And so what we aimed to do was to develop a map that would give us, for the various NRM assets, the biophysical assets, a map of the potential impacts on particularly identifying those areas where we might cross thresholds that had been identified in the development of our catchment action plan. The other point to make about this, once the framework was initially developed, it went through a peer review process, and those comments from peer review were included into the framework to make sure that it was suitably robust. It was also developed in consultation with the mining industry themselves, had their opportunity to be involved and have their contribution. It's probably worthwhile stating that cumulative impacts, it's not something that the Namoi CMA invented. It's a well-used term. Often people haven't progressed with it because they've been concerned that they haven't been able to identify with sufficient rigour what the potential impacts might be. So it seems that people have shied away from it, and jurisdictions in particular, when they've been going through an environmental impact assessment process, have decided that it's much easier to do it on an application-by-application basis, which to me personally seems like a fairly narrow way to look at it, because clearly the impacts of four or five applications, and just to take an example, if any of you know, there is an open-cut coal mine, two leases operating out near Maules Creek. They're adjacent to Laird State Forest. The current applications that are under consideration at the moment have the potential to wipe most of Laird State Forest off the map. That's some 3,500-4,000 hectares of mature growth forest that potentially will become a hole in the ground and replaced eventually by overburden. So, and that I guess highlights one of the importance of doing this work, because not only do you assess the potential impacts, but it also gives you the opportunity to talk about not only what restoration might take place after a mine or as a mine site progresses, but also what mitigation work can be done and what work could be done to offset, so hence the importance of the offsets policy. So this is an example of the type of map. I should stress this is hypothetical because it wasn't done on real data, but you can see the aim. I'll just go back to there. The aim was to be able to, and there's a legend down here which you probably can't read, but essentially the darker areas are those areas of vegetation, again hypothetically, that if they were affected by a mine or a series of mine sites, then they would have a major impact on that particular asset. So that's an example of the kind of base case layer that we put into the model. What I'm going to do now quickly is just try and run through this framework that has been accepted. So where we're up to in this process, we've done the framework has been done, and we're now in the process of building the model with the biophysical data that we already have on hand. Unfortunately, the people theme at this stage is not included in this model. I had the opportunity to suggest to Simon Crean yesterday that it would be a good idea if he funded including the socioeconomic impacts so that it was a more complete model than the one we've got. So we'll keep our fingers crossed about that. So what this is a bit of an action slide. So, and it just goes through the process of how we would actually use this framework. So we've got our NRM asset layers, so that might be vegetation, surface flow in subcatchments or in streams, biodiversity, those sorts of things. From there we develop the impact rules, similar to the previous slide that I showed. We classify those assets into impact classes and develop that layer, which is exactly as I showed you. We then look at developing the first base case mining scenario, and that might be, say, one underground coal mine, two open cut mines, and one coal seam gas activity mine. So within, this whole model is a GIS-based model, so you are able to plot not only the impacts but also the location of those impacts, which is why having access to the appropriate digitised data is really critical in the process. We look at where the proposed mines are looked at, develop that scenario mine layer, and from there we reclassify the assets on the basis of the mining activity that is being modelled, and that gives you a scenario impact layer, if we call it, which again would then be mapped right across the catchment. From that we develop our cumulative risk statement, and I'll show you an example of a risk statement in a moment. And we've already, in the part of it, identified the risk matrix for each of the assets. So we've done the analysis and we come up with the risk statement. We can then continue round that loop and add in additional mining activity. So this is the cumulative part of it coming in, and rework our cumulative risk statement. So that's the general process in which we follow through with the model. So I hope that's understandable. What I'm delighted to be able to say is that all of this information is freely available on our website. And as I said, I'll give you the references for it, so that if you haven't understood me because I'm too garbled or not resilient enough after last night, then hopefully you'll be able to look it up later on. The inputs I've already described there, the base case impact layer, the risk matrix for each NRM layer, the base mining case, and the outputs of the scenario impact layer and the cumulative risk statement. So here's, a hypothetical example. It's very important, and I do want to stress that as part of this process, we were able to work with the mining companies and they had the opportunity to make their contributions. I'm not sure whether I mentioned previously, but cumulative risk is actually part of a best management guide that the coal industry has. So it's a concept that is very familiar to the industry and something that they've have certainly thought about. So here's a scenario. Scenario one, our mines, they are described as large, medium-sized, and this is essentially depends on the area, the footprint of the mine, if you like, the location of it, the sub-catchment that they're in, and the type of mine. So here you can see we've got two open-cut mines and one longwall, which would be an underground mine, and one coal seam gas mine. So there's a so the mining scenario. So then we've used that to go through the model, and this is the cumulative risk statement, the kind of information that you end up with. I apologise for that rather busy slide. I was reminded yesterday when we were looking at the academics talking yesterday afternoon of a limerick about there once was a man from Japan whose limericks never would scan because he tried to fit far too many words into the last three lines. And I thought that this is something that should be applied to PowerPoint slides. So I apologise for the number of words on there. It breaks all the display rules, but hopefully you can see it. We've got here the assets down this side. So land use, the soils, threatened species, connectivity. So these I haven't mentioned. I've mentioned some of these assets before. The description of them, which are specific to the area where that mining scenario is proposed to take place. So if we look at connectivity, for example, you can see in this hypothetical, potentially 13 kilometres of functional connectivity lost, and 860 hectares of viable habitat disappears, and that's classified as a moderate impact. But a high risk of that happening. So it's what that's indicating is that it's quite likely that this loss of connectivity will happen if that mining scenario proceeds. You can see here under the veg extent and the veg type, we've got some severe potential impacts and an extreme risk. So that's saying this is almost certain to happen. A loss of 300 hectares of poplar box woodland, of which 92% has already gone in the Namoi. And the Moores Creek catchment vegetation extent will be 25 to 35%, which is the lower part of the thresholds, as a result of three mines in the catchment. So that's an extreme. So, again, I should stress that this is hypothetical, and the purpose of showing you the slide is to show you the kind of outputs that would come from the model. Okay, so where we're up to in this process, we've been through developing the framework. The framework has been reviewed and has been accepted. So we're now actually building the model with real data that we have available on the biophysical assets in the catchment. We're hoping, as I said, that the groundwater information, our groundwater information will be updated from the Namoi water study, so that we can include that so that we'll be able to answer some of the questions that people have raised throughout the community, particularly in terms of the impacts of coal seam gas wells going down through shallow aquifers into much deeper aquifers, several hundred metres underground. So that's where we're up to in the process. I guess a couple of reflections. As I said before, this is not a particularly new approach. It's included in the coal industry's best management manual. But this activity, or this mapping, is going on, and development of this model is going on at the same time as the New South Wales State Government is developing the strategic land use policy, which was released a few days ago. It makes reference to cumulative risk, but it doesn't actually and cumulative impacts, but it doesn't talk about a way to address them, to try and quantify them in a transparent and a sufficiently detailed way to enable the people who are most likely to be affected by the developments to be able to understand what might happen. As far as I'm aware, this is certainly a unique approach that's been pioneered within Australia. It has been presented to the expert group, whose precise acronym I've forgotten, but that was set up as a result of Tony Windsor's approaches to the federal government, saying out of the mining tax you have to put aside $250 million on expert independent scientific research so that we can really understand the impacts. So this work has been shown to the expert panel and has received, I think, pretty much everywhere where it's been shown, a pretty warm in the sense of good reaction rather than hostile warm, because people can see that it provides a step further than a single assessment application by application. That is what most jurisdictions are currently doing when it comes to assessing these sorts of mining applications and risks. The other point I should make is that you could easily use this model to look at any other shock or any other driver that might take you over a threshold or approaching to a threshold. So while this one is focused on the impact of mining and will include building different mine scenarios into the model, it could easily be the growth of a city. It could be a loss of water because there's a change for whatever reason in the regulation or climate variability or whatever. So it's a technique to be able to evaluate and assess in a more informed way. And again, I go back to the point of, or one of the key underpins of the resilience thinking, is that it allows you to adapt and change what you're doing, because we know that the systems are subject to change. So what we can best do is stay in touch with that change and where we can guide and perhaps manipulate if possible. There's the references, and I'm happy to provide them to anybody. I think my contact details will be with the conference proceedings. So that's really just saying where all of those documents are. So I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Jeremy's clearly demonstrated his resilience today and capacity to bounce back after an evening out. So time for one quick question, and then we'll sort of hand shit up first.
Yeah. Thanks, Jeremy. That was a very interesting presentation. I just want to touch on the socio-economic layer that you talked about in the Euro-Paris discussion yesterday. Obviously, I think the incorporation of the socio-economic layer of the risk assessment process is obviously an advantage. So a couple of points when I'm coming from a social science background. The first is, and I've seen lots of examples or attempts in this in the past, it's very difficult to add a socio-economic layer to a biophysical layer because, you know, plants don't move around, people move around. You know, and so the adaptive responses of people and businesses to a shock or exogenous shock is much more difficult to handle. So it kind of implies not just the addition of a layer, but a kind of a new methodology. And on that point, I think the social impact assessment literature says that actually it's not just you're creating an impact assessment, the process by which you do it is equally important. So having community meetings and telling people about, telling businesses and people and community organisations about a prospective change, that actually then influences their adaptive capacities. So what you're doing is you're changing the goalposts as you're developing the process. So I guess I don't criticise in any way, but the way it was sort of presented was, well, hopefully we get a socio-economic layer added on. And I guess I just want to say it involves quite a different metric to very good work you're doing on the biophysical side.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. I should clarify, my conversation in inverted commas with Simon Cream was much more in the nature of an aside and a very quick thing, so I'd hate anybody to suggest that I was doing some persistent lobbying. The second point that I should make is that you're quite right that, sorry, let me back half a step. We currently don't have the socioeconomic data maps across our catchment at the moment, and that is a first task for us, and is part of the reason why we invested in the study with the Cotton CRC in the work that Anthony did. So that's to help us build up that picture. So, and the second point is that I absolutely take your point about it may not, it's not as easy as adding another layer to a model like this. I think what I should express the wish much more is we would like to be able to assess socioeconomic impacts in, when I say the same way, to be able to determine what those impacts might be in the same way that we can use this model to do it. The methodology that we use to do that has not even been attempted to be described by us at this stage.
Okay, I'm going to have to wrap it up, and I'm sorry for that, but I know that everyone's going to need a cup of coffee and a bit of a stretch now. So just like to thank all of our speakers for this morning's session.